Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whenever, wherever you are listening. Thank you so much. You're now rocking with the best. My name is Kwame. And of course, big shout out to Brother B holding it down on our social media platforms. Make sure you check us out. Soul on Ice, the podcast. We're putting out some really great content, great stuff out there for people to check out. You know, Double Trouble is always in the house, but again, Akil Thomas is in Germany, and we're going to get some updates from him, not on this show, but hopefully we can find out what's happening with him out there. Who knows? He might be staying. He might have just said, you know, whatever, man, I'm going to live in Germany. Highly doubt it, but we'll find out from him. But one half of Double Trouble is with us, Elijah Roberts. What's happening?
Not too much. Just been getting busier with school. Our midterms are coming up soon, and, you know, things are really starting to pick up. But other than that, I see you're in a hotel. What's that all about?
So every year I help host the short films at the Edmonton International Film Festival. So with COVID and all that, you know, it's kind of doing a lot of stuff online, but I am still in the theaters. You know, I wear my mask, social distance and all that. And, you know, there's some filmmakers that are here from the Alberta region. And so we just kind of conduct our interviews. And I've been doing that for the last couple of years. And, you know, I got so much love for the Edmonton International Film Festival because this is where I debuted Soul on Ice. This is the place that really gave me that, that start visually for an audience, you know, October 7th, 2015 is when the film came out. So our fifth anniversary is dropping when you guys will hear this episode. So I just wanted to say congratulations to the whole Soul on Ice movement and everybody who was involved, from, you know, Michael P. Douglas to my editor, Adam Kidd, Chester Sitt, you know, everybody that was just part of it, who's in it. You can see, you know, from Jaden Lindo, you know, you make a cameo in there. Akil makes a cameo in there. Mike Marzen, Tony McKegney, Grant Fuhr, Val James, Anson Carter, Kevin Weeks. So, you know, it's
a lot
really
of great people in there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I couldn't have done it without all those guys giving up their time, you know. God rest the souls of Herb Carnegie, also to Trevor Daly's mom, Trudy Daly. She's in the film, and, you know, she passed away a little time after, as well as my homeboy, King Rain, who one of his songs is in the film. It's called The Promo, you know, and, you know, these people will forever be synonymous to the film. And their memories will live on because they put their time in there. So, yeah.
And, you know, five years, it's a pretty big accomplishment. And to this day, the film's still out there. I hear people talking about it all the time. So big congrats to you. And, you know, we kind of briefly talked about this before, but can you see a second film coming out anytime soon?
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about that is COVID kind of shut down a film that I was going to work on that was kind of like not a continuation of that same theme, but something a little bit more different. So, you know, I'm just waiting for things to kind of clear up a little bit that we can get back to shooting and putting this together, because it is like these important stories to be told. But, you know, there's going to be a lot more films out there that are dealing with Black athletes in the game of hockey. I know that Bell Media is doing something. I got two that I'm trying to work on. So I think, you know, what I love about the Soul on Ice brand or that film is it's just really opened up a door for a lot of directors, writers, producers to understand that, you know, telling black and brown or minority stories in the game of hockey is important and it's needed. And I'm just so glad that I was able to do something that kind of opened up some doors and opened up a lot of doors for myself to be able to be working in the hockey space and doing a lot of stuff with the National Hockey League. It literally gave me a second chance on life as far as being a creative because, you know, things were, you know, when it came to the radio thing, it just wasn't popping off for me anymore. So the film really, really opened up for me. And, you know, I just wanted to thank again, thanking everybody. I have to also thank the National Hockey League because they didn't have to take a chance on what I was doing. They could have easily just said, hey, well, good luck. But they embraced the film. When it wasn't cool to talk about black athletes in the game of hockey and social justice and social movements and diversity and inclusion, when it wasn't cool to talk about that or nobody was really talking about that, they had me out there going from city to city, NHL town to NHL town, showing these films and talking to kids and parents and coaches and employees and just, you know, just grinding it out. So, you know, I got to give a big shout out to the National Hockey League for just believing in me and giving me a chance.
Yeah, and with you, I think really you go back, you might have been the OG to really open that topic up and really expose people to how things have been. So kudos to you for that. And, you know, I was scrolling on Twitter the other day and I saw this video on Instagram, I saw this video and it was this kid saying, thank you, Mr. Kwame. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Black Girl Hockey Club. What was that video all about?
Yeah, so there's a kid. His name is Phoenix. I think their family's from Kentucky. I might be wrong on that, but they're from somewhere in the States where hockey is not a big thing. And Phoenix's dad had reached out to me a while ago, and we just kind of were talking about what it was like playing hockey in this part of the United States and how difficult it was to really get ice time and all that. So we just kind of stayed in touch. And there is this hockey camp that's happening and his son wanted to be a part of it. But, you know, hockey could be kind of expensive and these camps could be expensive and they're going to have to drive out and stay overnight and all that. So he was asking me, he said, hey, Kwams, do you know of any scholarships or anything out there where we can kind of get some funds to help take Phoenix out there and participate. So Black Girl Hockey Club, they started, you know, a nonprofit, and basically what they want to do is be able to help young kids of color, you know, and their families take away some of that financial burden. So I reached out to the founder, Rebecca Hess, who's, you know, a friend, known her from the Jumpstart. And I told her, I said, this young man needs some help. She did her X, Y's, and Z's and connected the dots, and they had donations. I know that they had donations over what they needed. So young Phoenix was happy. I can't remember his social media tag. I'd have to look it up. Let me just look it up, because if you ever get to go on Instagram and see this young man, he's a boxer as well. Money is like 7 years old, and he's
a boxer.
Yeah, he's nice. Wow, he's nice. He's nice with the hands. But if you ever get a chance to go on Black Girl Hockey Club, their Twitter, you'll get to see you'll see his story. And I think I posted his social media there. But kid is nice with the hands, and he loves his hockey. So I'm just really glad that, you know, Phoenix is getting a chance to go out there and play.
That's what it's all about, just getting that opportunity. And even if you don't make it to the NHL, just having that opportunity to go out and do something that you aspire to do. So
yeah, and just play, have fun. And, you know, hockey is it's a community thing. And, you know, when people were reacting to it and, you know, the first thing that I tweeted was, it takes a village, man, because you can't do this on your own. You're going to need the help of people. And luckily, the young homie had the big homie to connect the dots. So, yeah, anyways, I'm just really glad he's going to get to go to that hockey camp. And maybe when.
So is he at that camp right now?
Yeah. No. I think the camp is next month. I think his father was just trying to get the money together to do this. So big shout out to the hockey community. And with that being said, our next guest that's coming up comes from a pretty huge community of people. And we're gonna talk to him about his career, how he sees hockey, how he sees the bubble, how he saw the bubble. So give me 2 seconds. All right, let's get busy, man. So this young man, he was drafted sixth round in the 2011 NHL entry draft to the San Jose Sharks. In his major junior career, not only was he known for his skills on the ice, he was noticed for his academic excellence. He was a part of that blockbuster trade to Ottawa that saw Erik Karlsson go to the Sharks. Currently, he's playing in the PEG, a.k.a. Winterpeg, a.k.a. Winnipeg. Let me welcome to the show, Dylan DeMello, a.k.a. D-Mello is in the house. What up, Mello?
That was great. No, what an entrance. I mean, I don't think I've ever gotten that before. I was like walkout music type thing. That was great.
There you go. They need to have me in Winnipeg. So when you guys come on the ice for your warm-ups, I just warm up everybody. I get everybody hyped up to get on the ice.
That'd be great. I think there's probably a few teams that could use you for sure.
So listen, man, thanks once again for joining us. And, you know, I hope that you and your family have been doing okay during this whole COVID stuff. How you guys been handling this whole situation?
You know, we've been doing pretty good. I'm living in London, Ontario. That's where I'm born and raised. And, you know, even when we were shut down there in March, when everybody was, the whole world was, we were doing pretty good. We didn't have a lot of cases. And throughout the whole summer, you know, not a lot of cases here in London, but now that the students have come back, there's been a little bit more cases here. And, you know, I think something that we knew was going to happen with how many students were coming in to go to Western and Fanshawe, which are, you know, big university and colleges here in Ontario. So, you know, the kids are going to be kids. And,
yeah.
And you know, unfortunately, we have a little bit of a, not an outbreak, but we got some more cases. So things are, you know, as Ford said, I don't know if you guys saw, obviously things are being scaled back a little bit province wide. So, you know, a little frustrating, I think, just cause how long, you know, this has gone for. And, you know, I've been able to see my family and some friends, but really keeping the circle close and just trying to do my part and take care of my family and myself. And hopefully we can all get through this sooner rather than later.
So speaking of all this, COVID stuff, you were in the bubble, playoffs are done now. Did you follow things after you guys got knocked out? Were you watching games? And, you know, just in your opinion, how would you grade the whole presentation considering the circumstances?
Yeah, I think overall, I thought it was really well done by the NHL. I think, you know, being in the bubble, you know, it's obviously not everybody's first choice, but they did everything I think they could in order to make it, you know, fun for the guys. And I think just giving us things to do. At the end of the day, I think the players were just focused on winning a Stanley Cup. And I think everybody wanted to see how the season was going to finish. And especially, you know, when you're gearing up for playoffs like we were in March and things get shut down, you kind of want to just finish a year and see how things would unfold. So it's good that the NHL did that. It's great that there were no cases. And I think, you know, some guys probably love the bubble more than others. But I think overall it was great. You know, some of those games were really good. It kind of sucked we had no fans. You know, that marathon overtime game with Columbus and Tampa would have been awesome with fans. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it was a lot of the hockey, especially in that first round with all the games, and it's kind of like a March Madness type feel to it with the games all day. And I thought it was great for our sport to be on and a lot of people watching us. And I definitely was following it. I didn't watch a ton of games, but I definitely watched where I could. And it was a great playoff. I think, you know, a great run by Dallas, and Tampa was, you know, a well-oiled machine. They looked really good and very deserving of winning the Stanley Cup.
We talked to a few of the younger guys just about their bubble experience. But for you as an older guy and one of the leaders on the team, what was that experience like for you?
You know what? I enjoyed it. And I think I was in a little bit different position than the other guys because I just got traded to Winnipeg. I played only 10 games. I was there for maybe a month. So for me, it was, I was using that experience to kind of hang out with the guys, you know, be more a part of the team, and just kind of get familiar with everybody. And I kind of use it as a trial to see how I'd like this place going forward and like the group of guys. So, you know, unfortunately we weren't there very long. But every night, and this is a testament to the group there and the leadership group, you know, starting with Blake Wheeler, and every night guys were getting together, and if it was playing board games, if it was watching a few games at the Rogers Center there, and, you know, guys playing cards or whatever it was, every night guys were doing something together. And I thought that was really cool. And everybody was invited, and, you know, guys wanted to do their own thing. Guys were playing video games with each other, whatever it was. Guys are doing something together every night, and I thought that was really cool. And it's a very close-knit group there in Winnipeg, and I wasn't there very long, but they definitely make you feel part of the team. And we wanted to keep going for sure, and it sucked that we lost, but we had a real good time with our short time there.
For me, this is kind of the first year where I really got to pick where I played hockey. I mean, up until then, it was kind of where your parents pick or where you get drafted. For you, you have that same opportunity this year as a free agent. Have you given it much thought of where you want to play next year?
Absolutely. You know, this is really my first year or my first time to kind of really, hopefully, pick where I want to play, but also have some type of long-term, hopefully, commitment from a team. I've only been on, you know, two-year deals and kind of was sixth, seventh defenseman for a little bit. And that trade from San Jose to Ottawa really flourished for me, and I was given an opportunity to really show my stuff, and I think I took that opportunity and ran with it. And I'm looking for a home. I'm looking for a place where I can plant roots in and be there for a long time. I have a wife, a dog, a kid on the way due in January. So
congrats.
Thank you very much. Yeah, very, very exciting times. But you know, I'm looking for a little stability for sure, and looking for a good fit, and Winnipeg was that. And hopefully it works out there because I really enjoyed my time, and I think that's a team with a really bright future and a lot of really good players. And, you know, obviously the best goalie in the league recently, who just won the Vezina, and well coached, well run organization. And if it can work out there, great. But we'll see what happens. Obviously it's coming up. The ninth is coming up, and it's a very exciting but nerve wracking time. So hopefully we can get something done here with Winnipeg. And kind of go from there. If not, we'll see what happens.
How nerve-wracking is that for a young guy coming in the league? Like you said, you know, had two-year deal here, one-year deal there. Like, you just want to be in the spot for like 10 years or something like that. How do you deal with that?
You know, I think with my experiences I had, you know, I've learned so much. And being in San Jose, I kind of, you know, nothing was really given to me there. You know, I was a sixth round pick, and, you know, a late sixth round pick. So I wasn't a high pick coming out. I wasn't really talked about, but, you know, I just worked at my craft and worked at my game and had some awesome coaches throughout the way that really helped me. You know, all the way from junior with Dave Cameron, James Boyd, in the minors there with Roy Sommer, David Conniff, Ryan Mugenel, some great coaches that really shaped who I am and the type of player I am. And then at the NHL level, Pete DeBoer and his staff really gave me a chance to kind of play. And but you know, I was sixth, seventh defenseman type thing. So it was very tough, and you have to control what you can control. And that team we had in San Jose, we had really good defensemen, you know, Brett Burns and Mark Edward Vlasic and Paul Martin and Braun and Brendan Dillon, you know, so many good players. It's hard to really break through in that group. So you know, it was tough some games. You know, you're only playing 10, 12 minutes as a defenseman, and you know, but at the end of the day, you have to control what you can control. And I learned that very early, that if you're going to worry about outside factors and things that you can't control, you know, that's maybe where you flame out and you don't stay up in the NHL. So it's about worrying about what you can control. And that's the one thing I would tell all young players is, you know, you have to work, and you have to work on your craft, that's for sure. But there's a lot of things you can't control, but the one thing you can control is how you work and how you prepare and how you take the game serious. And I think I've learned that, and I've always tried to do that everywhere I've gone, and it's worked for me so far.
That's great, man. You know, I want to talk about your family, but you brought up Brett Burns. And whenever I look at him, I say to myself, if I was on his team and he invited me to go camping, I would be nervous.
I think he'd be the one guy you'd want to go with. I think he'd take care of you real well.
Yeah, but he'll take you into some deep spots, B. He'll take you into some deeps where you're going to have that nerves of steel out there. But he does seem like a really fun guy. What was he like, playing with and just being around?
Awesome. That whole group in San Jose was so much fun for a young guy like me. And you know, Burnsy, unbelievable defenseman. And, you know, Patrick Marleau, Joe Pavelski, Joe Thornton, Logan Couture, Joel Ward.
Some legends.
Absolute legends. And, you know, guys that liked having a good time but worked. And every day they're in the gym. You know, Pavelski's out practicing his tips with Burnsy 30 minutes before practice. These guys worked on their craft. But it was such a fun group, and guys knew when to keep it light and when to, you know, make things serious. And I think that's the advantage of having a very veteran group like that. You know, those guys know what they're doing. They've been around for a long time. You know, Burnsy's a very unique person. Obviously, there's nobody else like Burnsy. But he's an awesome dude, and he's a great guy. I really enjoyed playing with him. Learned a lot from him, and very personable. You can talk to him about anything, and quite the outdoorsman, as we all know. And he's a guy that I always watched, and some of the things he can do at his size and his skill set, it's one of a kind to be that big and that skilled. He's a remarkable player, and he takes care of himself. I think he'll be a good player he's getting up there, but he'll still be producing for sure.
Yeah, definitely. He'll be one of those longevity guys. And he's got those great Kit Kat commercials.
Oh yeah. He's got the face for it, right?
So. Yeah, he definitely has that. So your background, you're Portuguese, and you know, you guys are a lot like West Indian families. You know, you guys are tight, big families, loud. Was your community really supportive of you coming up when you were playing hockey as a young man?
Well, for sure. I think there's so many Portuguese people in London. It's unbelievable. But I have a huge family. My grandfather on my dad's side had 7 siblings that all moved into the London area, so it's a huge extended family I have. My mom's side as well is big, so everybody supported me, and you know, would come to my minor hockey games and always check in on me, and have kind of, you know, came to some games here and there in the NHL level in Buffalo and Toronto, and made the trip to Ottawa. But it's so much support, and people are always cheering me on, and it's kind of nice to bring them along this path as well, and you know, they can experience some great things as well. So I know it's a little, maybe not tradition to be playing hockey compared to, you know, everybody's playing soccer, but, for me, hockey was just a sport I fell in love with.
Have you ever gone out to Portugal?
I have. Yeah. I've been probably 5 or 6 times. The most recent time was probably, 4 or 5 years ago. It's a beautiful place. If you ever get a chance, some of the best beaches in the world, and awesome seafood if you love it. And, you know, the great thing about Europe too is that you go over there and you can travel for a buck to other countries. So Portugal is beautiful. I haven't been to the islands and the Azores yet, but that's definitely on the list. That's where my dad's side of the family's from. So I would like to go out there. But it's you know, Europe's just a different world in general. It's a different vibe, and I still have some family there on my mom's side in mainland Portugal. So get to see them when I'm out there.
And all the Portuguese guys that I know, they're big soccer fans. Would you consider yourself a soccer fan like that, or you kind of don't pay too much attention to that?
I pay attention. I wouldn't say I'm a crazy soccer fan, but I'll definitely watch. Like, I was watching a little Premier League this morning here, and then once, you know, American football turned on, I started to watch a little bit of that. But I like watching soccer. I'm a big Champions League guy. When you know, the heavy hitters from all the leagues play, I think it's unbelievable soccer. So, you know, it sucks that we couldn't do the Euro Cup and defend our crown as Portugal, but hopefully we can do it next year and defend the crown with our boy Cristiano.
You know, my family background is Guyanese, and there's a lot of Portuguese in Guyana, South America. And for the West Indians, we say the Portuguese. And
yeah,
my one of my best friends growing up. His name was Eddie Moshea, and his brother was Baptista. They were Portuguese. And what's so funny is that for years, my mom would say, "Why don't you call me mummy? Why do you say mãe?" And I realized I got it from my Portuguese friend.
Oh, nice.
So that was kind of, so, you know, I got to connect with you, man.
There you go.
Drew Doughty is Portuguese as well, isn't he?
Yeah, his mom is on his mom's side.
Yeah, awesome. So I just want to switch gears a little bit. You know, I saw on your Twitter, you had like retweeted some posts from Evander Kane, you know, and we've seen what's going on with this whole social justice movement and how it's kind of intersected deeply in the NBA, NFL, NBA. And, you know, like a lot of people are talking about how it's kind of been dealt with in the NHL. What were your thoughts about that whole social justice movement? And, you know, what are your thoughts going forward? Because this is something that's just going to always be a part of our game. And as players, you're going to have to deal with it some way, shape, or form.
Well, I thought it was great that, you know, the players, and it was player-driven, that they decided to sit out those games. And I thought it was great, not just from our league, but all the leagues, to use their platform to try to shine light on this issue. I know some people didn't love the timing of the NHL and how it was maybe a little later. You know, I'm not in the bubble. I can't say. I know guys were saying that they were, you know, about to play a game and they didn't feel informed enough. Mm. I wasn't there. I can't comment, but I'm just proud of all of the players of all across leagues using their platform, because at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're just lucky enough to do this as a job. And it doesn't matter if you're Joe in accounting or, you know, a player in the NHL, you have a voice. And, you know, obviously people gravitate towards athletes or public figures, you know, idolize them, whatever it may be. I thought it was great. And I think it's something that we need to continue to stay on. You know, this can't be something we do once and hope that it's, you know, it's taken care of. And, you know, that's why I retweeted what I did. And I know Evander a little bit from playing with him in San Jose, and obviously Joel Ward. And I love what they're doing. And I think it takes, you know, a lot of guts to do what they're doing. It's not easy. So I'm really happy and support them. And something that I agree with, those are my values. And I've always been taught to love one another and treat others as you like to be treated. And, you know, I've played with athletes of color and never thought anything else of other than my teammate or my brother. So it blows my mind that we still have those issues here today with racism. It's sad. I just hope that we have a better future for our kids. And, you know, that's what my goal is the people I encounter, the kids that I raise, the people in my family, I just try to educate them and just try to spread my love and my message, because at the end of the day, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a Catholic, and, you know, that's how I was raised. And, you know, love one another is like the golden rule. So that's what I try to do.
That's what it is, man. The Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy is given out to the player that exemplifies perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. The winner of this year was your buddy, Bobby Ryan, who was dealing with, and I guess you can say is still kind of trying to make strides with his rehab. How happy were you that he got that award, and how important is it for young hockey players to feel comfortable about speaking up and getting the help they need wherever they can, whenever they need it?
It's huge. I remember that day when Bobby kind of left us, because we were on the road in Detroit, and you know, he decided on his own that he needed to go and get some help. And it was amazing. I was so happy and proud of him. And, you know, I messaged him right away and I told him he's never been stronger. And, you know, he saw something in himself that he didn't like, and, you know, he fought it, and it's going to continue to be a fight. Like you said, as happy as I was for him, I'm happy for his whole family, because I'm sure they've had to deal with this as well. You know, it's great for Bobby, and he's such a nice person. He really is. He's such a great guy. He's beloved in Ottawa, and it's unfortunate that he won't be there any longer. I hope that he can, you know, have kind of a fresh start and be back to that player he was in the past, because his skill set is, you know, maybe not everybody can see it, but practicing with him, his skill set's right up there. He's got unbelievable hands, unbelievable feel for the game, and being that big body, I think he can get back to that. But you know, for him and to get clean and healthy when he was around us after he came back from, you know, rehab, I guess that's what it was called, or whatever he was doing. He just looked so much better, and you could tell that it was like a weight off his shoulders. He just looked so much more healthy, and it was really, I got dealt, but, it was so nice to see him just back, and he just looked happy. His family looked like he was in the right state of mind and in the right place. And his first home game back, he gets a hat trick, and you couldn't have scripted any better. So, I hope that he can continue to stay on that right path and, you know, get back in the league and show everybody the type of player he can be.
So what do you think about the kids and the importance of being able to, you know, understand that, you know, it's not a stigma against your manhood to speak up and ask for help or to say, hey, I need help. I got to take a break.
Absolutely. I think that's huge. I think, you know, you need to be able to feel confident and come out and say that. And I think, you know, Bobby's obviously one instance, but other players have done that. It's crucial. I think that you need to, in this day and age, you know, no matter what you do and who you are, you have a voice, and you're never too weak to say something. If anything, it actually makes you stronger, because you're able to feel something in yourself that may be a weakness, and you're going to come out on the other side, and it's going to be a lot stronger for it.
What are some of the causes that you may be involved in, or some of the things in the future you want to kind of dip your toes in that are outside of the game of hockey that can maybe be beneficial in whatever community you're playing in?
Well, I haven't really thought too much about it. I would love to, and I don't know if it's while I'm playing, but I would love to coach minor hockey. I think for me, it was such a game changer having really good coaches in minor hockey, not just in to elevate myself as a hockey player, but as a person, as a human being. You know, a big credit is to my parents for, I think, raising me the right way, but I had some really good mentors as coaches, and even at the OHL level, I had really good coaches and a really good billet family. I would love to coach minor hockey, or even, you know, OHL or something of that age. And I think those are such important ages for not just how to shape a hockey player, but how to shape young men and women. So
what would you say are some of the characteristics that make a good coach, and some of the things as parents, you know, because parents have to maneuver to find all these different places where they can play. What would you say are some of the things they should be looking out for?
I think it was the leadership they had, and I think that they just taught me life lessons, you know, in regards to working hard, being on time, being respectful to linesmen, being respectful to the hotel staff when you're at the hotel, you know, respectful to your teachers at school. If I hear you're being bad at school, you're not going to play.
Right.
You know, things like that. I think, you know, my parents, again, they just taught me to treat us as you'd like to be treated. Don't disrespect people. Don't be a bully. Don't, you know, love, kindness, stuff like that. You know, if my mom would tell me if I didn't do good in a class, I wouldn't be at hockey. That was like the worst threat of all time. If I was like, I can't go play hockey, what am I going to do? So that was something that always reflected to me. And respect was the biggest thing. I was always just taught respect. Respect your coaches. Go shake the other coach's hand. Go shake the referee's hand after the game, no matter if the ref, you know, maybe screwed you on a call. Those little things that I think at a young age was just kind of made me who I am. And I think those are vital for all kids. So that's why I think sports is such a great thing. And, you know, not just, you know, if you go and play a sport, just as a person and whatever avenue you go through in the future.
Yeah. And I think it'd be great if we saw you getting into coaching, you know, coming from a player's standpoint and having a coach who's played in the NHL and played at the highest level, you take a little bit more when you're learning from them because there's someone who's been through it. But I want to just jump back to a bit your time in Mississauga. Mm-hmm. You were Mississauga's nominee for both the Ivan Tennant Memorial Award and the Bobby Smith Trophy. And for those who don't know, that's the OHL Scholastic Awards. How important was your education to you? And did you ever think about going university route?
education was very important to me, instilled at a young age by my parents.
You did say how
my mom was.
You weren't following up in the grades.
Yeah, if I wasn't doing my homework, I wasn't going to practice. So I'd come home, finish my homework, and go to practice, or go play with buddies and road hockey, whatever it was. And I found school pretty easy, and I studied and worked hard, but I felt like I was smart I think I was pretty dedicated, and I was willing to, put that work in. And I think that's because of my parents and raising me the right way. And same thing happened in high school there. And, I knew when I was, drafted to the OHL that there could be a possibility to go to university. And, I didn't really, obviously everybody's dream is to play in the NHL, and, not everybody can make that a reality. And I didn't even know if I was going to get drafted. I've never didn't have anybody who went through this as an older brother or anybody. So, I was just going to play hockey junior and have fun. And, if I can make the NHL, great. If I can't, I'll fall back on a college degree. And, I think it was just, I wanted to be able to have both options open to me. And I think it's a great outlet if you can go to university, if you don't make the NHL or make pro, it doesn't mean your professional career is over. You look at a guy that I played with, Joel Ward, and he went to, school for 4 years out east and had a great career. So I think education is so important to get a job and do what you want to do, that you'd be silly not to take advantage of that situation, OHL, or if you go that college route. I never had the option to go down to the U.S. college. I was drafted decently high, second round in Mississauga. So I figured I was going to go play OHL. I always wanted to play OHL with, going to Knights games and stuff like that. And, the OHL for me was the step that I wanted to take.
You're a big reader, I hear.
Who told you that?
Hey, listen, I can't give up my sources, but I heard you're a big reader. Where did that come from? And what are the kind of themes that interest you a lot when it comes to reading?
I like reading history. I like reading about, I'm like a World War II junkie type guy, and obviously not glorifying it, but, I think just to hear their perseverance and the brotherhood, I think that's one of the better generations of all time of, just doing whatever it took to take away the evil of, Nazi Germany. And I just find it remarkable, maybe from a human side, of just what they had to go through. I love reading about history, and I just love, I've been reading books about athletes and what they do to take care of themselves and how to better themselves mentally. I'm actually just currently reading a book on what to expect when you're expecting type thing as a new father. So that's, that's the first time I've read that, but, I'm a World War II junkie, and I kind of like reading autobiographies of that sort in that regard. So, yeah, I think it's just the brotherhood of it all and the mental stability or the mental frame that they had to have to go through that. And obviously it was physical, but the mental part of it, and I love watching like Band of Brothers. I don't know if you ever watched that HBO or the Pacific, and you kind of get attached to these characters, and they're obviously based on real life people. And
I love war movies. I love war movies, like the old school ones, Saving Private Ryan or A Thin Blue Line. And, I love watching like the Ken Burns documentaries on them. Those are always great to sit down. Mm-hmm. And, when you think of like World War II, again, it's not about glorifying it, but to me, it just seemed like one of those, I equate that perseverance, that fight as if, aliens came down and were attacking us. You know what I mean? It was one of those types of wars where everybody had to be like, that's evil. We got to take care of that right there. And so I can appreciate that love for that type of history. And I think history is a great thing. Are you a big documentary guy?
I am a big documentary guy. Yeah.
What's the last one? What's the last good one you've seen or a good one you could recommend?
I don't know if it was, I guess it was a documentary, but, that Social Dilemma on Netflix. Yes,
on Netflix.
Yeah. I just watched that last week.
A little scared to watch it.
It's a little scary for sure. And just regards of, the usage of the social media and how it kind of manipulates things. But I would say it's an eye opener. It's a little scary, but nothing that I really didn't know, minus some of the things in regards to, I'm not going to ruin it for everybody, but I would give it a watch. I think it's a real eye opener, and I think it'll definitely, if you look at your usage on your phone, you might want to second guess it after watching this movie.
Yeah, sometimes I get my usage, and it just freaks me out. I'm just like, what am I doing?
For sure, you go down that rabbit hole. You're looking at one thing, and next thing you know, you're like, 2 hours later, how did I get here? Right? It happens for sure. And,
when you could be reading a book.
And yeah, you could be reading a book, and yeah, you could finish a pretty, you could finish a book in that time. So no, it's I definitely recommend it if you got some time to spare. It's a good watch.
Good one. I'm on it.
You talked about a couple of times how your sixth round draft pick, you weren't necessarily expecting to be drafted. With the draft kind of coming up, what advice would you give for these kids hoping to get their name called?
Well, you know, first off, it doesn't really matter where you go. And even if you don't get drafted, it's not the end of the road. There's a lot of players I played with that weren't undrafted that beat out top round picks for spots. And at the end of the day, it's just a number. It's just, it's a great accomplishment, obviously, for yourself and your family, but it's not everything. And once you get drafted or you don't get drafted, that's when the work really begins. And even if you make it, it's nonstop work, because I was this guy that was, you know, chomping at the heels of guys that were regulars and trying to take their job. And if you think you're regular in the NHL and you can take your foot off the gas, or regular in life and period, and regardless of what you do, if you think you can take your foot off the gas, you're not going to be around very long.
Yeah. I think what I appreciate about you more so than anything is the fact that you were a sixth rounder. And, you know, how many sixth rounders ever get a chance to say that they can go maybe from team to team, or people want to see them? And so that tells me a lot about that perseverance. Where would you say you got that work ethic from?
I keep going back to it. I think it's my folks. I think I watch them, you know, obviously you don't realize it when you're a kid, but when you think about it, them waking up early to drop you off at practice, or take your mom working late hours and coming home to make you dinner, your dad working overtime to, you know, make that extra buck, or, you know, working overtime so he can come with you to a tournament. You know, all those things, all the time they've given, the financial they've given, how much they've invested in me. I think it just showed what I needed to do. And, you know, I thought that I was a hard worker, and then I didn't realize how much harder I had to work once I actually turned pro. And then once I played in the NHL, I thought I was working hard. And then when I saw Joe Thornton and Burns and Pavelski and Couture and all these guys, Patrick Marleau, take care of themselves and how hard they worked, I realized I got to, you know, continue to work. And not that I was being naive or anything. You just don't realize, you know, you work hard and you realize, you know, you work hard in the OHL, you do good. You think you're working hard. Then you go to pro, you're like, oh man, these guys are working hard. Look how hard, look how much time they invest in their body. Look how much time they're investing on the ice. That's another level. Then the NHL is just another level. So I learned at a young age from my parents working hard, but then I learned as I grew through the ranks, through the veteran guys in the AHL, OHL, NHL, how much harder I had to work.
That's the difference between being good and being great. What are your thoughts on where hockey goes from here, considering COVID-19, social justice issues? It's a new world out there. You know, how are you going to adapt to everything?
Well, I have no idea when we're going to start, first and foremost. I don't know how we do it. I don't know. I'm not going to obviously talk for all the players. I just don't know how we would, if we could do a bubble, how we would do a bubble with 31 teams. I don't know. I just think, I hope guys can take care of each other. I think as a league, as kind of as a brotherhood, I hope guys, you know, if we have to play and, you know, if we have to travel to each team cities, that guys aren't going out and being silly and getting each other sick. Mm-hmm. You would hope that for guys, as you see, you know, the NFL has some guys getting sick, and, you know, the Patriots
Cam Newton
play
just got, yeah, Cam Newton.
Jeez. Yeah. And, you know, you see in, you know, overseas in soccer, they're getting guys sick, and, you know, you just hope that guys can take care of each other and we can play and do this in a safe way. And you hope that going back to a new season, that we don't lose steam off this, you know, the social justice issues as well, that we can keep this going. And because, you know, I think for whatever reason, you know, this feels a little different. I feel like we're gaining more steam with this one. And I hope that we can continue to have legs with this and we can take it to new heights, because we need to.
Love it. So, okay. time to switch gears one more time for you, brother. What all is right. the deal with the country music, man?
Well, country music's, yeah, it's all right. I mean, I'm down for it.
I've heard you're huge into country music. I heard that you're a savant when it comes to music lyrics. How true is that, those statements? Do I have lyrics, to go back to my sources?
No, I'm actually not bad at lyrics. Like, I think I'm pretty good. I can listen to a song a couple of times and I can get the lyrics pretty good. Like, not bang on, but I can pretty much nail the lyrics. I like country music. I'm a big Zac Brown Band fan, but I'm open to everything. I like hip hop. I like rap. I like rock. I like 80s, 90s, Queen, AC/DC. I'm pretty open. I got to anything but like screamo music I can't do. I can't do screamo music, but I'm open to like techno, whatever it is. I kind of just go with the flow.
Right. So what's that game show called where you have to do the lyrics?
Don't forget the lyrics.
Would you be dope in that?
I think I might be all right. I might need a little practice, but I think I could hold my own. It's a hard game. It's the pressure's on, but I think I could do it.
Are you a classic country music fan?
I would say I'm more modern country, but not like the hip hop, not the pop country type thing.
Okay.
Like, I like the country. I don't, you know, I'm not the big pop country type guy.
Elijah, what's that thing you guys always be going to, that the country music festival?
Boots and Hearts.
Boots and Hearts, nice. I haven't gone to Boots and Hearts, but I've gone to a few country concerts. I was at the Stampede last year, so that was, you know,
Calgary.
Yeah
that's a good time.
I was there last summer. It's a great time. I recommend it. It's awesome. They got a little bit of everything, but obviously, you know, more country based. But I've been to a few country concerts. I used to go see Kenny Chesney with my buddies every summer down at Ford Field, and it'd be like him, Eric Church, Eli Young Band was there one year. He would just bring a couple of people with him. But when he was touring, we'd go down to Ford Field and just have a great time. I think we did it 3 summers in a row. And that was my big country concert. I wasn't really the biggest fan of Boots because it was just, I felt like it was just like a marathon. Like, it's like 4 days or 3 days. Yeah, it was just like,
I've only gone for one day. I don't think I can do the full 4 days.
That's tough. And it's like, where is it? Like, kind of Barrie area up around that area? Or is it further?
Kind of a little bit past Barrie.
Yeah,
that's a little bit ways from London for me. And I think if I'm there for that long, I might be, I might be out for a week or so.
Yeah, that takes some dedication. I used to live in Calgary, so I know how nuts that Stampede was. And it does have everything. You know, I remember Snoop Dogg performed during Stampede
weekend. I saw Snoop last year.
Oh, yeah, what'd you think?
I saw Snoop last year. Oh, he was awesome. I mean, he still got it. You know, he maybe moves a little slower, but he still got it. He's still Snoop D-O-double-G for sure.
Dylan, are you a big Christmas guy?
Love Christmas.
Because I was doing a little bit of research
holiday.
On you, and I was looking at some videos, and I saw you directed the Christmas comeback little skit the Senators put together. Can we expect more Dylan DeMello in the film industry? Yeah.
Wait, first of all, before you answer that question, what is the Christmas comeback? Please explain that to me. This seems like a lot of laughs.
Oh, man. I don't know. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, I think, you know, that media team in Ottawa was really good. And they just kind of had an idea and asked if I'd be a part of it. And I thought it'd be fun to do. And, you know, show a different side, right? You know, hockey players, you know, we don't really show too much of our creativity side, I would say, off the ice. You know, I don't know. I have a grade 10 drama award in high school. I thought I'd put it to use. And, I had some fun with it. They had just kind of some lines for me, and then kind of just firing off the hip a little bit and just trying to have some fun with some of the guys. And, you know, you got to get to know your teammates and know what buttons to push and whatnot. But I credit the media team in Ottawa kind of, taking the lead on that one, I would say, and coming up with a great idea. That was I got a lot of love, so it was a big hit.
Who's the star other than you?
Tough. I mean, I don't even know. There's guys were pretty good. I think, you know, Brady's a funny guy, Brady Tkachuk.
Yeah, he is.
You know, that he's a great kid, and he's real fun. I'm trying to think who else. I think Tierney was pretty funny in that video, and I know Chris Tierney really well from, you know, the San Jose days. So he's a guy that's real funny. I don't know. I'd like to say I thought I was pretty good in it. So I think I'm just going to say I was a star.
That's the right answer.
There you go.
Yeah.
When you think of all your hockey moments, which would you say was the greatest one?
So far.
So far, yeah.
Lots of time left.
You know, you'll never forget your first game, your first goal for sure. I remember it like yesterday. But I think for me, I was a part of that team that went to the finals against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately lost. But for me, that was my first full year in the NHL. That was a remarkable run. And even though we fell short, you can't take it for granted, that type of run, because guys don't get like an opportunity like that very often. That was, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau have been playing in the league for 17 seasons, I think, at that point. And that was their first time in the finals. So It really, it really showed me how hard it is to win in the playoffs and how much work puts into a full season just to get there, just to make the playoffs, but then to, go on a run like that. And I hope I can get on another run like that again and hopefully win the Stanley Cup. That would be the absolute dream. And seeing Tampa Bay win it, there's no fans there. But the emotion, you could see it on their face, how much it meant. Probably meant even more being in the bubble. But, that's what we all play for at the end of the day. And, everybody dreams about scoring that goal in game 7 to win it, right? So you don't think of making the NHL and thinking, I'm going to make 10 million bucks, 11 million bucks. It's I'm going to go win a Stanley Cup when you're a kid. So that's the goal. And that was probably my best experience. And I didn't even play a game in the Stanley Cup playoffs at all that year. It was just so fun to be around the guys and just kind of be a part of that journey.
Soak it all in.
Absolutely. Especially as a young guy. That was my first year. That was a lot of fun.
I was really happy for Blake Coleman of the Lightning's winning, because I did a piece with him. I took him to Wyclef Jean's house from the Fugees, and great guy. Yeah, we all had this little round table discussion about race, society, and all that, and unexpected, but Pickle is just, he's a salt of the earth, great guy, and he just had a kid. He had a baby girl this year. And so I love those type of stories, just had a baby, had to go to the bubble, leave his baby. And I think, in one of his videos, you could see, I think it was maybe a day or so before he left, he was just with her, and it was so cute, 'cause he was just like, daddy's got to go win a cup. And then he actually goes and does it, So that's really cool.
That's great.
Do you know what you're expecting, boy or girl, in January?
No, we don't know. We're doing it old school. We're going to find out once the baby comes out. So hopefully, obviously it doesn't matter. It's,
of course,
as long as it's healthy. But I don't know. We just did that 3D ultrasound the other day, and where you can
crazy, like, right?
Crazy. So gut feeling initially when we found out we were pregnant, I initially thought girl. I don't know why. I just thought. But then after seeing the baby's face, I think it's a boy now. So we'll see.
Yeah. My son just turned 3. So I know that excitement, being a first time dad, getting prepared for it, reading those books, what to expect, when to expect it, to get the apps and all that stuff and start, but when that baby comes, bro, I'm going to tell you right now, throw all that stuff out the window, because you're going to be doing it on the fly. 'Cause man, I'll tell you, there's nothing going to prepare you for like poop projectiles. That's not in the books.
I guess it's good. I'm playing hockey for this long, and I've experienced my own, stinky smells. But I'm sure there's gonna be nothing like it. Well, I guess that's all part of it, right? And all the things, you look back on and laugh as you are right now. So looking forward to it for sure.
Listen, man. Thank you so much for your time. But before we let you go, we like to do this thing called our top 5, and you're a music guy, so I know you're going to rock this. We've had some players that have come on that have given us garbage 5 songs. 5 songs that we would think that if they were going out to play, they would have a biscuit kind of a day. It would just be soft. So we bring this to you, brother. 5 songs you're going to play going into a big game.
Okay, so this is a little outdated because I haven't done this in a few months. 4 games, I'm a big techno guy. I need to get the blood going. I need some beats going. So 5 songs I got here. These were 5 songs I listened to right before I'd walk across, the hotel in Edmonton.
Okay.
I had Good Things Fall Apart by Alenium with Tiesto. No idea who that guy is, but I know who Tiesto is. Tiesto. One More Day with Afrojack and Nicky Romero. One Last Time with Alesso.
Okay.
High on Life with Marty Garrix. Love Marty Garrix. Great guy. And then Calling by Sebastian Ingrosso with Alesso. So I got some heavy beats going there. Those are just five songs, but I'm pretty open. I like Kygo. I like Martin Garrix, like I said. Pretty open to techno, any type of techno before a game.
Mm. Elijah, yep. What do you think of the techno? How does the techno affect a player going on to the big ice?
I mean, I'm not huge on the techno, but I am huge on just getting yourself hyped up. So it's if that's the music that does it, then I don't get people who listen to like country and slow songs before games.
Yeah, I'm not a country guy before a game, that's for sure. If it's hip hop, you know, I'm usually not on the iPod before the game. It's usually somebody else, but you know, if it's techno, some hip hop, even if it's rock or whatever, something to get it going. I'm kind of open for whatever, but if I get to choose, it's techno.
See, I believe, I mean, I never played professional sports at such high levels, but, you know, I did the whole, you know, competitive stuff as a kid growing up and stuff like that. But I realize how music is very important. Like, how important is it for you as an athlete? Do you conflate the two? Do the two mix for you?
You know, I definitely like listen to music. I would say if it's not on in the room, I don't think it's going to like alter my game or I'll be like, I need music. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you're in between intermissions, you're not listening to any music anyways. So, but it's nice to have. And I think it definitely gets me in the zone. I feel like it definitely works for me. And I guess it depends on the type of music, but you know, I need music working out. I need music, you know, before a game for sure, ideally.
D Mello, if people want to follow you online, where can they see you? Instagram, Twitter, what do you got?
I'm not a big Instagram guy. Believe it or not, I don't have a whole lot of social media. I try to stay off my phone and spend time with my family because my wife's on my phone.
You're making me feel guilty right now. You're making me feel
guilty. No, I just got Twitter. It's DDems. @DDems2.
You're a new friend of the show. We'll hit you up on social media. We hope to stay in touch. We're going to have you back wherever you land before that season starts. We're going to have you back on the show. And yeah, man, once again, congratulations. And thank you very much for joining us, man. I appreciate you, bro.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
So that was Dylan DeMello, a.k.a. DeMello, Mello Mello in the house. You know, Elijah, what I like about guys like him, again, I keep going back to the fact that he's a sixth rounder. And, you know, as a sixth rounder, that could be kind of deflating for you. And you could go one or two ways. You can kind of just, you know, let your career slip away. Or you can, you know, buckle up and go hard. And like he said, you know, it doesn't matter where you get drafted. As long as you put the work in, you might get that time.
For sure. And one of the things he kept going back to was his parents and the way he was raised and to just stay determined and motivated. And, you know, it's very easy as a sixth round pick. Like if you look at the odds, sixth round picks aren't supposed to make the NHL, never mind play many years in the league. So he just kind of stayed determined. And I want to stress for like all the kids in the draft this upcoming week, it really doesn't matter. You can see first rounders who are on the same team as DeMello who aren't playing. Mm-hmm. And he's a sixth rounder who just grinded it out and now he's a regular. So, or I wouldn't say regular because we kind of talked about not being satisfied with being a regular, but
yeah,
he's gone in and just continues to work. And, you know, I think this year with his contract, he's going to get paid. And I think there's going to be a team that wants to sign him to a long-term deal.
Yeah. He's a hard worker, man. I mean, look at Yakupov. He was a first rounder. First overall,
yeah.
Where is he now? So to all them youngins out there, it don't matter. It don't matter. Just work hard, do what you got to do, and you'll make that team. And, you know, you got to put in the work if you want to be the worker. So, Elijah, thanks for hanging out once again. I'll see you guys next week. We got to get some updates on Akil. I know things are a little irate out there in Germany, but we hopefully will get a get some information on how he's doing and what's going on out there. But other than that, people, remember to check us out on all social media platforms. Like, rate, subscribe, review, tell a friend, and we will see you next week right here on Soul and Ice, the podcast. Bong, bong.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power, statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson, I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, it's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and know the, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Let's dedicate this one to Jade and Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinta. Or maybe you prefer that Benz, boy. That big truck, I don't give a f***. Only really want a house for the kid. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the pass from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. Young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. When our numbers come through the TV, soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.